Welcome to the Instagram Stories for Saturday, October 18th. I'm your host, Daniel Hill, and this is the weekend edition of the Instagram Stories. Today on the show, we're going to do something a little different. Yesterday, I didn't record an episode because I spent some time with Anth Poe. If you're not familiar with Anth Poe, he is a YouTuber, and you know what? Here's a clip of him doing a podcast interview with Colin and Samir to give you context for who he is.
So I am a YouTuber, and I recently have been enjoying doing things like anonymously to kind of like prove to myself that like it's not like I fell into this. Like I feel like I care so deeply about it. So I've been hanging up posters anonymously, and the one was for a Timothy Chalamet lookalike competition. And then like 10,000 people came, and it was obviously covered internationally. And then the coolest part was like other communities and countries started doing it. Like there's been thousands of people doing it, and like it's all a cool, like it's what I wanted, which was like to turn the internet into like a place for people to hang out in real life. Mm-hmm. Right? Like the internet can feel very secular and like perpetually in one place on your screen. And I wanted it to be like, oh, we can like hang out in real life too. And I think that's
okay. You're probably familiar with the Timothy Chalamet lookalike contest. He also dressed up as a cheese ball man who ate a giant container of cheese puffs in Washington Square Park. That's where I first heard of him. So now that you have a little bit of context, I'm going to share some of the things that he talked about with me yesterday. I didn't record the episode, but I will play some of the clips from this Colin and Samir interview that he did because we talked about similar topics, and I think it's incredibly relevant. Stick around. Welcome back. So yesterday, I spent the day with Anth Poe on a tour of Manhattan as part of an experience from the Airbnb team, and he showed us around some spots in Manhattan that you might not ordinarily go to. We had a chance to talk about some of the events that he's put on, and we talked through some ideas that I potentially had for gathering people together, and it was a really fun conversation. One of the things that he told me when it comes to creating events, having people show up, is how important it is to focus not on the event, but what feeling you want people to leave with. And I think that's such a fascinating way of thinking about planning something specific. Here's him kind of explaining the idea the way he did on the Colin and Samir show.
I think a lot of like creators and like brands think of things backwards. Like instead of like observing a community from the outside, like you really have to like engross yourself in it. And like I'm just chronically online. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for me to like look at something and go, oh, like if I saw this organically, I would post about it. Like that's just the North Star for me. It's like I just remove myself from the thing and I'm like, if I saw this, would I think it's funny? And that is like, that has not failed me yet. Because I am on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, like all day. Like it's what I, unfortunately, it's I'm addicted. So.
Okay, I'm going to pause the clip there. But fundamentally, this is an idea I've said many times on this show. If you create a piece of content, is it good enough that somebody would want to share it with someone else? What are their reasons for sharing it with someone else? Probably because it's funny, probably because it's entertaining, maybe because it's educational. Those are all very good reasons to share a piece of content with someone else. Another idea that Anthony really focuses on, and I love this too, is it something where if a person participates in it, it's so good that they're going to want to tell their grandchildren about it 40, 50 years into the future? They leave that event with such a memorable feeling for what they've experienced, for what they've participated in, that they can't help but tell others about how great it was. And I think this is a fundamental idea that I really want to try to, okay, I'll admit, copy. I'm going to work on my own event. I'm not going to say what it is yet because I'm not prepared to talk about it, but I will keep you posted as I develop that. In the meantime, I've linked to the entire interview from Colin and Samir with Anth Poe in the show notes, which you can go check out. And when he posts the video from the content that I was part of yesterday, I will link to that as well. I'll definitely tell you about it. Looking forward to seeing how that content came out. We were all over Manhattan doing silly things, and I think you all are really going to like it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ashley Coffey and I will dive into this week's AI news. Stick around. Welcome back. Here's Ashley Coffey and I diving into this week's AI news, and a lot of focus this week on OpenAI, some of the things they've been doing, and what they are planning for the future. Let's move on to our next story, which has to do with a similar vein, OpenAI making a 5-year business plan to meet the $1 trillion spending pledge that they've made. The article that we're referencing, and we'll link to it in the show notes, it has an image of all the large tech companies that have tied their fortunes into OpenAI. And the list of companies includes Google, Oracle, Amazon, Nvidia, and Microsoft. These companies have staked their future growth on OpenAI's future growth. All these companies are intertwined. We talked about that last week. But the amount of effort that OpenAI is going to have to put in order to meet these revenue goals, these spending goals, it's a huge leap. Right now, OpenAI books about $13 billion in annual recurring revenue. 70% of that comes from consumers who use ChatGPT, which costs $20 for a standard subscription. ChatGPT has more than 800 million regular users, but only 5% of those are paying subscribers. Obviously, OpenAI's goal there is to grow the number of paying subscribers, but there's a lot of concerns. Who are the people who are going to be willing to pay for this? And looking at OpenAI's operating losses, in the first half of this year, they lost $8 billion. So there's a lot of risky things that need to come together in the right way in order for this to be successful and not be the bubble that it seems like everyone is pointing to. Ashley, what do you think?
Yes, this ties into our episode from last week. So if you haven't listened to that, go ahead and go back because it is relevant and it's something that will be a recurring theme on this podcast is this circular, almost kind of like bubble that's happening, kind of like The Big Short, if you've ever seen that movie, of these companies are really just funding each other. It's cyclical and time is running out. We'll see what happens. It's very strange, though, to see it in real time of just how big of a bubble it is. But it also makes me want to go tell all these small startups that are doing AI stuff of like, be intentional. Like, don't just get into it because it's AI, because you're going to have a very small chance of success considering what this bubble looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Excellent point.
Japanese government calls on Sora to make their open AI to refrain from copyright infringement, says that characters from manga and anime are irreplaceable treasures that Japan boasts to the world. So the Japanese government made a formal request asking OpenAI to refrain from copyright infringement. And this comes as a response as Sora 2's ability to generate videos featuring the likenesses of copyrighted characters from anime and video games. And October 1 is when Sora 2 launched of this year. It's capable of generating 20-second long videos at DP resolution, complete with sound. And soon after its release, social media was flooded with videos generated by the app, many of which contain depictions of copyrighted characters, including those from popular anime and game franchises like One Piece, Demon Slayer, Pokemon, and Mario. And the Japanese government's cabinet office press conference on Friday informed everyone that the government's request called on the American organization to refrain from infringing on Japanese IP. So this is interesting because I believe the last incidents that we had, if I'm remembering correctly, it's a specific style of Japanese anime and people were using. And their argument was that it was a style and style can't be copyrighted. So there's different considerations and definitions of copyright, both in like Japan and the US, obviously. And we're in a wild west. So I don't blame Japan for wanting to protect its like cultural content. What are your thoughts, Daniel?
I'm actually surprised that more companies haven't come out and forthrightly said, this new app should not have any of our copyrighted characters, actors, anything, because of all the capabilities that it can do and the opportunities for misuse. Having said that, it seems like OpenAI's strategy is give unlimited copyright infringement ability and worry about the rest later, which would be fine for two college students in a dorm room coming up with a new idea, but it's something completely different for a company that has such a large valuation and is so critical to so many other companies' futures. So overall, I'm very surprised at OpenAI's approach to this whole intellectual property situation.
Yes, and to correct what I said, it was not Murakami. It was Studio Ghibli was the anime style. And that was in March of this year whenever OpenAI introduced the ability for their 4.0 tool to generate images. Correction corner. We'll be watching this.
Okay, I'm going to stop it there. If you want to hear the rest of the episode, I will link to it in the show notes. That's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Come back next week for Mosseri Monday, where we talk about what the head of Instagram shared on his weekly Ask Me Anything. And as always, thank you for listening.
Let's get it. The year was 2013. You posted your first pic and you're glad you posted the scene. Your friends liked it too, but what you didn't know is what posting on that platform would do. Taking all your time and attention, doom scrolling, also let me mention, you gotta post on every platform, putting content on every set just to conform. Likes gave you validation and you got hooked. Now engagement is down, you feeling overlooked. Hey, keep coming back for more podcasts and find me on Instagram at Daniel Hill Media.